Hello, and welcome to Words of Wisdom, a podcast dedicated to reflecting on the wisdom of the Book of Proverbs. Your host is Dr. Jerry Weirwool, who will share life-giving truth from Proverbs that will help us become wise and discerning. Wisdom is a journey, and we hope you will join us for this exciting adventure.
We have been in Proverbs chapter 2 for several episodes, as it focuses on describing the benefit of wisdom and why Solomon is urging his son to diligently seek wisdom. And when he has found her, to hold on to her, for she will be like a protector and guardian, rescuing him from the way of evil and from those who walk on the roads of darkness and who rejoice in evil perversions. Verses 12 through 19 list a number of dangers and harmful circumstances that wisdom will protect a person from. In the previous episode, we examined verses 12 through 15. And so here we will continue on in the latter half of the verse to see what else wisdom will deliver us from and why we should cling to her for life. I'm going to begin at the start of the section so we can get a better grasp of the context and how the list of dangers is presented in this section. Proverbs chapter 2, verses 10 through 19 says, "For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you, and discernment will guard you, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the one speaking perverse things, from the ones who forsake the upright paths to walk on the roads of darkness, from the ones who are glad in doing evil, who rejoice in evil perversions, from those whose paths are twisted, and from the devious in their ways, and to deliver you from the strange woman, from the foreign woman who is flattering with her words, who leaves the mate of her youth, and has forgotten the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death, and her paths lead to the dead. All who go into her do not return. They will not reach the paths of life." Starting in verse 16, the verse says that wisdom will deliver you from the strange woman, from the foreign woman who is flattering with her words. Now, we need to take a moment and talk about who the proverb is referring to here. The terms strange woman and foreign woman are set in parallel to each other, indicating that they are referring to the same person. But the meaning of these terms is likely not familiar to us as modern Western readers. Our first thought might be that it refers to someone who the son is not acquainted with, as though the woman is a stranger to him. This idea can also be inferred, perhaps, from the second description of her as a foreign woman, designating her as not a native Israelite, but ethnically from some other country. Even though these terms can indicate such meanings, as they do in some other places in the Old Testament, here in the book of Proverbs, they refer to a woman who is outside the covenant community, who is unchaste and morally disobedient to God's law. She does not hold the same social and religious values as the son. Moreover, she is foreign to the son because she is likely another man's wife. She is not in a covenant relationship with the son, and therefore he is forbidden to be involved with her. It is also possible that the terms refer simply to a prostitute or an unmarried woman that is attempting to seduce the son. But the meanings can overlap and refer to an unfaithful wife who remains a prostitute or harlot in her heart, even though she is married. Regardless, she is strange and foreign in the sense that she is not the son's wife, and therefore he is not permitted to have sexual relations with her, regardless of whether she is married to another man or not. The way that the strange and foreign woman entices the son is by flattering him with her words. The Hebrew is literally to use smooth words, which refers to how pleasant and enjoyable the words are. Flattery is giving someone excessive praise and compliments in order to win their favor, so as to serve one's own personal interests and gain. We have an English expression that resembles the meaning of the Hebrew. When we call a person a smooth talker, we're describing that person as one who is able to win over the listener with their charm and persuasive words that coax the listener's ego or boost their self-esteem. And thereby they're able to manipulate the listener to do what they want, whether it is perhaps buying a new car, giving in to some sort of peer pressure, or just not reporting a crime or wrongdoing. Flattery can obscure a person's good judgment and hold a power over them, causing them to act in ways they normally wouldn't. Well, here in verse 16, wisdom is said to deliver a person from the flattery of the strange and foreign woman. In other words, wisdom will help us not succumb as easily to the attempted influence of other people who are using smooth words to try to get what they want. The way that wisdom can protect us from the power of flattery is to enable us to discern between what are sincere compliments and genuine words of praise, and what is flattery, where the one speaking has a hidden agenda and is trying to achieve something for their own benefit. Essentially, flattery is a type of deception, where someone lies to you about what they think, all the while masquerading it around as encouraging words or admiration to you. And while some flattery can be blatantly obvious and overt, oftentimes it is much more subtle and strategically played. It is the delicately placed and finely tuned flattery that is the most dangerous, because deep inside each one of us, we all secretly desire to be admired and spoken well of. And flattery feeds our sinful pride, like how dry kindling feeds hot coals, causing them to quickly burst into flames. We might even know that the other person is being disingenuous, but as long as it feeds our desire for recognition and gives us a quick feel-good because someone is speaking highly of us, even if it's not true and we know it, we can be tempted to buy into it and get caught in its trap. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 5 says, "A man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet." Flattery is a type of trap, and if we are not careful, we will find ourselves stepping right into it. But that's where wisdom comes in and disrupts our selfish inclinations. Wisdom has no desire to be flattered, and it doesn't care about things that just make us feel good. The ultimate feel good is living a life with the fear of Yahweh, honoring and glorifying Him through our thoughts and actions. And so the benefit of seeing life through the eyes of wisdom is that it strips away all the disguises, deception, and darkness, and helps us see things in light of the truth and honesty and integrity. This is why Proverbs chapter 28, verse 23 says, "One who reproves a person will find favor afterwards, more than the person who flatters with the tongue." It is better to speak truthfully, even if it is not what the listener would enjoy hearing, than to speak deceitfully with flattery and hold back what is upright and honorable. Well, next, in verse 17, the strange and foreign woman is said to be someone who has left the mate of her youth and forgotten the covenant of her God. The Hebrew word translated mate literally means just a friend or companion, but in this context, it clearly refers to the woman's husband. It would be confusing to the modern reader to say that she has left the friend of her youth. However, there is an important point here, in that the person we marry is supposed to be our best friend and companion. But in biblical times, a man and woman were typically not friends before the wedding. Marriages were mostly arranged, and often the young man and woman had never even met each other before the wedding. But they were to grow to love each other and be friends and companions throughout their lives. In the proverb, the mate of her youth is paralleled with the covenant of her God, implying that the violation of the marriage covenant is specifically in view here. The man who does not allow wisdom to dwell in him, nor discretion and discernment to guard him, is susceptible to the temptation of lust and may go astray after pleasures with women other than his wife. We can now see clearly that the strange and foreign woman is an adulteress, and she is figuratively described as having a house that sinks down to death, and her paths lead to the dead. This is simply a descriptive way of portraying the destructive consequences that will result from being involved with her. She carries with her death, and her ways point toward the dead. She will bring disaster and ruin upon anyone who she is able to catch in her trap of flattery and seduction. And to follow up this description is the warning that all who go into her do not return, and they will not reach the paths of life. The Hebrew word translated go into refers to entering into the woman's home, but the phrase is also likely carrying sexual overtones here to also refer to the man going into the woman in sexual intercourse. To go into her means to have sex with her, in the same way that the phrase to sleep with her is another way of saying having sex with her. The proverb, in typical hyperbolic fashion, states that people who get caught up in sexual sin like this do not return and will not reach the paths of life. Meaning that people who make a habit of sexual sin will not attain the abundance of life that godliness and wisdom provide, and that they will not experience salvation and everlasting life in the future. As we must remember about Proverbs, they generally describe something that is true. But most Proverbs are not mechanical formulas and absolute truths, and therefore, there will always be instances and circumstances that do not follow the expected outcome that the proverb states to be the case. For example, there are people in the Bible, like King David, who escaped being caught up in sexual sin after committing adultery with Bathsheba. But on the other hand, even King Solomon, the wisest of all, got completely caught up in sexual sin and never escaped, and it became his downfall. In order to illustrate this proverb, I would like to share some excerpts from an article from Ministry Magazine written by a former pastor who lost everything because of his foolish actions. In the article, the author goes by the pseudonym Roger Brandt, and he retells his tragic story and the devastation it caused in his life and his family in hopes that others will learn from his mistakes and not make the same poor choices he did. As Brandt begins his story, it goes like this, quote, "No one in his or her right mind wakes up and says, 'Today looks like a great day to commit adultery and destroy my marriage.' It's infinitely more subtle than that. I married quite young, priding myself that I could beat the statistics against teen marriages. You see, I'm the kind of person who has a big enough ego that I hate to admit weakness or defeat. That in turn feeds directly into the pressures every minister faces. We need to look good, not just from 9 to 5, but every minute of every day. We learn to come across as a near-perfect friend, counselor, parent, and spouse. People expect it of us, and we often come to expect it of ourselves. I believe this creates a unique kind of job stress that helps cause breakups in pastoral families. Looking back, I see that the marriage I had before committing adultery had many foundational cracks I simply chose to ignore. My spouse at that time was quite different in personality from me. We often had a hard time relating. Certainly, better attempts at communicating through those barriers at an early stage might have prevented what happened. However, when you have yourself convinced that you have the strongest marriage of anyone you know, it's all too easy to ignore the problems. Little irritations that remain unaddressed don't go away. They just build in the subconscious and make one vulnerable to temptation. This, I am sure, was a major factor in what happened to me. The second part of the equation was a friendship that grew over the years. Frankly, it was the deepest friendship I had ever known. At first, there was no romantic involvement with this woman. It was just that here was a person to whom I could say something, anything, and feel completely understood and accepted. That's a great thing. Everyone should have that kind of friendship at least once in a lifetime. Further, I don't feel that the kind of soulmate friendship needs to occur strictly between spouses. The problem for me was that after several years, I began to have feelings of romantic love toward this person. How did I deny that there was a problem at that point? Easy. I simply convinced myself that there was no way my friend felt the same toward me. Thus, ignoring the possibility that she was also in love with me, I continued the friendship as usual. Indeed, there came a point where I began to hurt inside over my desire to be with this person. But still, I denied there could be any real danger. Then, one day, I discovered that she felt exactly the same toward me as I did toward her. That was ground zero. My life would bear little resemblance to sanity for some time. What were the results of my actions? In a word, unimaginable. Oh, sure, I'd given a great deal of thought beforehand to the implications of leaving my existing marriage. I knew there would be guilt. I knew the kids would be deeply affected. I knew many people would be shocked. I knew I would lose my job. However, anticipating the consequences paled in comparison with experiencing the reality of what happened. I mentioned guilt. I had never known a sense of self-loathing such as followed in the wake of breaking up my family. I had never been prone to depression, but suicidal thoughts became almost a daily occurrence. Looking back, I realized that without God's intervention, I probably wouldn't have lived through those early days. And my kids? Oh, they were indeed hurt. Devastated, in fact. As they grow up, they will encounter problems. Most kids do. Like any parent, I pray their skirmishes with puberty and the temptations of the world will be minor. But to the degree that they do have problems, it will be all too easy to beat myself up inside and say, it's all my fault. Sure, in my head, I know that it's not being entirely fair to myself. I should tell myself that those problems might have occurred anyway. But then, I will never know for sure. Were people shocked? Oh, yes. 90% of the people I thought of as friends stopped talking to me. I remember going to an annual church rally a couple years after the breakup. I saw some people I knew fairly well, looked in their faces, and said hello. They turned away as if I didn't exist. Do you know what it's like to hold out your hand to an official church greeter and have him refuse to shake your hand? I do. Yes, it brings back guilt, and it also causes hurt and anger. Did I lose my job? In a heartbeat. There was even an attempt to use a loophole to deny me severance pay. Money desperately needed by my former wife and the kids, as well as myself. Unemployed. You know how that hype we as pastors get about how much money we could make if we used our skills in the business world? Hype is about all it is. Try marketing yourself on the strength of a degree in theology. I did manual labor for a while. It was hot, dirty, and dangerous work. It wasn't all bad, though. Physical labor makes for good therapy. I also gained a new appreciation for the blue-collar workers who make this country run. Then I worked for a church member for a while until he tried to cheat me out of several hundred dollars. That wasn't all that bad either. It opened my eyes to the fact that folks at church who are all dressed up in their Sunday best can become very different creatures when they step into the office Monday morning. The bottom line is that I went from being a successful pastor of a large church to being just another guy looking for a job. Any one of these consequences of my sin would make for a major life crisis. Put them all together, and the stress load was crashing beyond belief. Time heals, but looking back, I realized that without God's gentle hand, I simply would not have survived. Now, what can we glean from Brandt's testimony in order to better understand the wisdom of the proverb? I think one thing that it depicts well is the far-reaching effects of committing a sin like adultery. While Brent was repentant and turned away from continuing in his sexual sin, irreversible damage was done by what he did. He not only hurt himself by destroying his career, but he also destroyed his marriage and family. The effects of his betrayal and this trauma upon his children cannot be measured. It will affect them for the rest of their lives, and he will have to bear the burden of not knowing just how much his sin will cause them to struggle and the problems it will produce in them. In looking back on our lives at the times when we made really bad choices that had far-reaching and detrimental effects, we probably would say that we would not have made those choices if we truly understood the destruction it would cause and the pain and hurt we and others would suffer because of it. But that is exactly the role that wisdom is meant to play in our lives. As Proverbs says, discretion will watch over us and discernment will guard us, in verse 11, to help us see evil coming and to understand the consequences of our actions ahead of time so that we can avoid the foolish mistakes and heartache that result from them. Wisdom will be our protector and guardian, and will watch over our paths if we let wisdom come into our heart and lead us to the knowledge and understanding of how to live with righteousness and integrity. For this protection and guidance can only come from Yahweh our God. This is the wisdom of the proverb.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Words of Wisdom podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so appreciative if you would share this podcast with your friends. And if you have been blessed by this work, please consider supporting the podcast by clicking on the donation link in the description.